ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वरं रूपा कदा मह्यं तदान्ति स्वापदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सगणा रघुनाथान्वितां तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगणाललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च।
हरे कृष्ण। सो ऐ वेलकम इच एंड एवरी वन ऑफ यू टू द संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम ऑफ श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ मंदिर। वी आर वेरी हैप्पी दैट ऑल ऑफ यू हैव कम। Sitting over here, I just feel like the way Arjuna felt when he saw so many Maharathis in front of him. Dronacharya, Bhishma, an insignificant jiva like me sitting on the Vyasasan trying to speak something to all exalted souls like you. Please forgive me right from the beginning. But following the instructions of Gaurang Prabhu and Govind Prabhu, I don't have an alternative. So Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam kaschid mamveti tatvataha. There are very few people who come into Krishna consciousness. One out of thousand, Lord Krishna says. And out of thousands of such people, one person may realize Krishna in truth. So I was just thinking about this shloka today morning and how much it is applicable to this place like Mumbai, in a crowd of 15 million people. How many do we have over here? Maybe less than 1500 people. So not even one out of thousand, it's actually one out of 10,000. So we can understand that Krishna consciousness is very, very rare. And those of us who are fortunate to be in Krishna consciousness, how important it is for us to take it seriously. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of all the Vedic scriptures, tell us as to why is it that there are so many or so few people who come into Krishna consciousness. Material nature is very, very powerful, particularly in this age of Kali Yuga. It is so easy to give in to the dictations of the mind and the senses. So in Naimisharanya we still have Suta Goswami explaining what he had heard from Sukadeva Goswami to the sages. And Shaunaka Rishi is inquiring from Suta Goswami to tell them what exactly he had heard, what Suta Goswami had heard. And Shaunaka Rishi during the course of the conversation tells Suta Goswami that Swavidvara hostra kare samstuta purusha pashu. men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, was giving a very, very powerful lecture at the Cross Maidan in 1977. A very, very famous program. And just last year we had celebrated a repetition of that at the Cross Maidan. And in this program, Srila Prabhupada tells his disciple Bhavananda Goswami, now is Bhavanand Prabhu, to read out those verses which are actually forming the theme of our Krishna consciousness movement. And one of the verses that Bhavananda Goswami read out was this one. And Srila Prabhupada took up from this particular verse to explain as to why is it that people who are having this dog, hog, camel and asses mentality, they just do not in any way appreciate or praise the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, the tendency is that people who are of this mentality, they praise dogs, asses, camels and hogs of a higher mentality. So that's the nature. You need somebody to praise. And if you do not praise a devotee, then you praise a person who has this animal-like tendency. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining as to what is the nature of a dog. As all of us know, the dog by nature is very affectionate to his master. And everybody else is very much anti, very much against. So whoever comes into his house, he will bark very forcefully to tell him that I am the master of this house. Actually, he's not the master. Actually, the master is somebody else. But then he wants to prove to the person who comes to the house that he is the master. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining that actually the present educational system is making us like dogs. A person acquires all this high degrees after a great deal of endeavor. Particularly nowadays we find that this competition is so intense to acquire a seat in any of the prestigious either medical college or IIT. There is so much of endeavor that is required to be put. And finally, what happens? When a person gets a degree, he has to go and beg for a job. Practically. That's maybe a very selected few may be asked to come with an offer of employment, what they call as campus interviews or campus recruitment. But the majority of the people, they have to go and practically beg. And that's the reason why we find nowadays engineers are being offered 4,000 and 5,000 rupees salaries. This is reality. Yeah. What to talk about engineers, chartered accountants who were so-called glorified till about 15, 20 years back. Today you could get a chartered accountant for as low as 8,000 rupees. Lawyers, even doctors. I was actually surprised to hear that there are so many of these new organizations called business process outsourcing organizations, BPOs. And they are recruiting doctors. MBBS graduates, they are coming. And what is the effort that MBBS graduate has to put in for his studies? It's unbelievable. Day and night, practically, he has to be slogging away. And then finally, he takes up a job, which is not even a day shift job. It's a night shift job. Whole night, he has to be spending working, earning his livelihood. So this dog mentality is there in all of us, to be reaching out to somebody and begging that person either to engage us or to give us something. And the other side of a dog is to bark at anybody who he doesn't accept. Srila Prabhupada would often quote this example of the United Nations. Now, the United Nations is supposed to be a group of nations who are united. But the surprising thing is that every year we find that there are new flags in the United Nations building. More and more nations are getting carved out. And here in India also we find the same thing. We have newer and newer states. A country which is supposed to be divided all of a sudden, people clamor for their own state, their own statehood. They want to become independent. So where is this being united? Srila Prabhupada would say that this United Nations is nothing but a group of dogs from different countries coming together and barking at each other. And also when we visit a foreign country, we see that these immigration authorities who are there are nothing, there's no difference between them and a dog. They ask you, where have you come from? Why do you want to come into our country? How long are you going to stay over here? Do you have somebody to maintain you? So many questions they ask you. And actually this property belongs to Krishna. And they think that they are the controllers. And they ask you all this question. You can go actually anywhere. Why should there be barriers in this planet Earth? Because everybody thinks that I am the proprietor of this particular place. I am the owner of this place. Doggish mentality. And similarly, hogs. A hog is completely indiscriminate as to what it eats. Srila Prabhupada would say that if you give a hog a plate of butter halwa, halwa that is cooked in pure butter, for us it's a delicacy. All of us, when we see butter halwa, we don't eat anything else. We eat only butter halwa. But for a hog, if you give it a plate of butter halwa and you give it a plate of stool, what is it that the hog will prefer? The hog will prefer stool. So the only thing that the hog discriminates is between dry stool and wet stool. It doesn't like dry stool because it doesn't have any juice in it. So a hog is completely indiscriminate. And people have acquired this hog mentality. They eat whatever they come across. And in order to satisfy the tongue, the human being is going to such an extent, completely degenerated into an animal-like condition. And we hear of stories of how people in Korea, they eat dogs, cats, cockroaches, flies, mosquitoes. It's good that they eat mosquitoes. It's less trouble for us. But that just shows the mentality. Just in order to satisfy the palate, eat indiscriminately. And now, and this is of course foretold in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12th canto tells us how eventually a human being will give birth to a child to eat its own child. Right? And that's happening today. A few years back on the internet, there were some photographs of how people were eating a foetus, and you could get this foetus off a shelf, off a shop in some of these Asian countries. So horrible. So this hog-like mentality is actually there in all of us. Srila Prabhupada said that a devotee eats Krishna Prasad. What to talk about not eating any of this deplorable substance. We only eat food that is offered to Krishna. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. Tad aham bhakti upahartam asnami prayatatmanah. Just a flower, leaf, fruit or water is all what the Lord requires from us. Not that we have to make an elaborate offering. Of course, in our Sisi Radha Gopinath temple, we have 6 times offering to their lordships. Very, very wonderful, opulent boga is offered to the deities out of love and devotion. But it's not that the Lord requires all these things. The Lord just says, you just offer me a flower, leaf, fruit or a little bit of water and I'm perfectly happy. And a devotee ensures that whatever he eats, he only eats what is offered to the Lord. Because that is purified, that is prasadam, which is so important and so essential to our Krishna consciousness, to the development of our finer brain tissues. And an ass. In Bombay, although we don't see so many asses, but when we enter into a crowded local train coming in from Virar early in the morning, actually, all those people who are traveling in the train are none different than asses. They are so much conditioned. I remember I had an uncle who used to stay in Chembur. They are now shifted to Nerul, further away. But He used to be working in Churchgate. No, not Churchgate, VT station. And every day in the morning, he would catch a particular train. And those days, we were small. We used to be coming to Bombay for our holidays. And he would ensure, he had to ensure that he caught up that same train. And 25 years back, or maybe 30 years back, for me at least, such an act was completely incomprehensible. Why is it that a person has to catch a particular train only? Why the same train? Yeah, he had to catch the same train. And nowadays, of course, people catch a train 20 minutes earlier in order to go back. If you are staying in Mira Road, then you go to Bayandar and then catch the train so that you get a sitting place. About 25, 30 years back, it was not so bad. But you had to catch the same train every day. And Saturday, Sundays used to be having off days. And literally, on Saturday and Sunday, just when the train catching time used to arrive, my uncle would become very restless. Force of habit. He would think to himself, is it really a Saturday today? Should I be going and catching the train? And my auntie, in the evening at 8 o'clock, exactly, she could set the clock according to the time that her husband came back from home, from her office. And that was Chembur. But of course, today Chembur is one of the more expensive places in Bombay, and people are staying even further today. At Nerul, Sanpada, Belapur, Panvel, people are commuting. I remember when I was in Siemens, there was I had a data entry operator. A very nice person. But he was so much accustomed to working late in the office. Every day he would work till minimum 8 o'clock. Minimum 8 o'clock. And then he used to stay somewhere in the suburbs in Kandivali or Borivali. And then by the time he reached home, it would be 10 o'clock. And then again, next day morning, he had to catch a bus to come to the company by 7 o'clock. And Saturdays, he would come to the office just so that he could get overtime. Work, 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 work. And one day, I just caught hold of him and asked him. His name was Pandya. I asked him, why is it that you're working so many hours in the office? So he said, I've got used to it. My family has got used to it. Now if I go home early, they ask me, what's wrong with you? Have you become sick or what? Should we go to the hospital? Should we go to the doctor? Is there something wrong with you? They really become concerned because they don't see him throughout the day. And his children have grown up now and practically they have not seen their father. He comes home when they're already asleep. And by the time he leaves, they are still to get up. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining in that particular class that an ass, what does it do actually? An ass is made to carry heavy burden on its back. In fact, it is made to carry so much of burden that practically it is trembling. And then it's made to walk long distance. And then when that load is taken off, then it's given a little bit of grass. And then the ass feels so happy. Oh, I'm getting this green grass to eat. And then at night, the male ass is looking around for a female ass. Just trying to see where it can enjoy. It's so tired at the end of the day. But then all that it wants, all that it's looking out for is recreation in terms of sex. And Prabhupada was graphically describing how this ass comes towards the female ass, and then the female ass makes him believe that she likes him. And then she plays with him, and as he comes closer, boom, she kicks him on his face. And then the ass becomes completely stunned for a few minutes, and then it thinks, oh, never am I going to do this again. Never am I going to fall for this ass's, or female ass's activities. And then it starts eating grass. And again this female ass comes and waves its tail in front of the male ass. And then the male ass thinks, oh, maybe I'm not so ugly to look at. Maybe everything is quite all right. Maybe she likes me finally. And then again he goes towards the female ass. And again she kicks him. And this goes on the whole night. So assish mentality. And camels. What is the special feature of a camel? The camel likes to eat thorns. A camel in the desert, of course, it doesn't get any green grass. but it likes to eat thorns. And as it is eating these thorns, its mouth starts bleeding. And it is chewing these thorns along with its blood, and then it's thinking, it's tasting so nice. So juicy, the thorns are so juicy. But does any sane man come across thorns which are juicy? Is there anything like that? but this camel is thinking that I'm eating these thorns and these thorns taste so nice. Srila Prabhupada was comparing the mentality of a business magnate or an industrialist to that of a camel. He spends his whole day and night, it's energy in trying to earn more and more money. In fact, he wastes blood in trying to earn that money. I remember a couple of years back, we were in a program, and this program was conducted in a colony which was habited by people who are working for a very big company in India. And after the program, we started talking to some of the people who were there, and all of them were praising their boss. The boss means the person who was owning the company. And they were saying that this person, it's unbelievable. He comes to the office at 8 o'clock and then he leaves at 11 o'clock. That means he works in the office for 15 hours every day. For 6 days a week. And they were glorifying him like anything. So I was reminded of how Srila Prabhupada says that dogs, hogs glorify those who are bigger dogs and hogs. And this person who was owning this company was worth at that particular point of time something like 10,000 crores of rupees. What would any of us sitting over here do if we had 10,000 crores of rupees? Would we even be working, thinking of working in an organization? We would be coming over here and spending all the time before Radha Gopinath, chanting maybe 64 rounds a day. May not be so easy, but still we'll try. Associating with devotees. So many wonderful things to do when we have that much of money. Giving it to Radha Gopinath for expansion of preaching activities. But certainly not work from morning 8 o'clock till night 11 o'clock. So much of anxieties. But this is what people do. Because the more you have something, the more you want to have more of it. Because this greed that is there within us is insatiable. It can never be controlled. It can never be reduced. And our aspiration is to make more and more wealth. And beyond a particular stage, actually, it is not just for the sake of making money, but it is for the sake of power. And people think that if we have that much of power, then we'll be able to be bigger controllers. Because ultimately, that is what a person wants. The ability to control other living entities. The ability to control material nature. And to the extent that he feels he can control material nature, to that extent he feels that he is happy. All of us know that in this material world, the most powerful position is that of the President of the United States of America. And theoretically, anybody could become the President of the United States of America. Because America is a free country. An Indian could become a President of the United States of America, for example. So the aspiration of every person is to become the President of the US. But then, when you become the President of the United States, then we can understand what is it that that person goes through. Because practically each and every one of the presidents have written their own book. Memoirs, what they call. They relate their own experiences. And I remember once having read a book of a president who was recently a president, ex-president now. And he was relating how it was that practically every night he was under so much of anxiety. He was in a so much of tension that just 2 or 3 hours he would be able to sleep. And during the daytime, because he was not getting sufficient sleep at night, during the daytime he would be feeling so lethargic and sleepy. And he said that during the entire 4 years, there was not a single moment where I could say that I have really slept peacefully. He's making his own confession. President of the United States of America. And everybody is aspiring to reach that position of being the president. So however big a person becomes, material nature has a way of setting him, putting him in his proper place, eventually. When I was working for Siemens, there was a person who was working for Siemens for 35 years. He had joined Siemens when he was a 20-year-old boy, and for practically, he had joined as a clerk. And as the years went by, he started getting promotions after promotions. And eventually, by the time he was 56 or 57 years, he became the general manager of one of the divisions of Siemens, which is a relatively senior position. And then he was thinking to himself that now I've achieved the goal of my life. And unfortunately for him, so this is how finally karma catches up with you. Unfortunately for him, he had a change of his boss. He had a new boss who came in from Germany. And right from day one, the chemistry did not match. For some reason. Although he was trying his level best to please him. A smaller dog trying to please a bigger dog. But this German, for some reason, he was just not able to get along with this person. And things came to such a head that this general manager, overnight, he was stripped of his portfolio. He was not given any job. No function whatsoever. And he still had 3 years to go for retirement. A classic case of a person in such a deplorable state, because in front of him was 3 years later, he would be getting a heavy pension. Yeah, because you retire at the age of 60, and after that, till you die, the company would give you a pension. So at the age of 57, he could not quit. He could not leave the company, because if he left the company, he would lose a pension. But at the same time, he didn't have a job. So right in front of our eyes, we could see this person, how it was that from a person who was having such a big stature, he became a nobody. So he was given a cabin, because that particular position entitled him to get a cabin, and he was given a secretary. But he had no work. So every day in the morning, he would come. Religiously, he had to come to office at 9 o'clock and he had to leave at 6 o'clock. So 9 hours he would be sitting in the office reading newspaper, playing games on the computer, making telephone calls. No work. But during that 3 years, he lost 20 kilos of weight. And within 6 months after he retired from the company, he left his body. He died. Such a miserable death. And this could happen to any one of us, actually. Yeah. When we take our position as secure, and we think that our position is intact, nothing is going to happen to us. When complacency creeps in into our consciousness, then what could happen to us? Something like this, gentlemen. In any situation in life, whether you are in a spiritual society or whether you are in a material society. In both the situations, we can't be complacent. Like Srila Prabhupada would say that even in Krishna consciousness, there is no stagnancy. You have to either go up, that means you have to go forward, or you have to retract, you have to go backward. Yeah. And particularly in the material world today, we see that just remaining in your job is like standing on a treadmill. Right? All of us know what a treadmill is. Right? A treadmill is a machine where you measure the functioning of your heart. So you have so many of this wires that are connected to your body, and then you're made to run on that treadmill. And every 3 minutes, the treadmill goes faster and faster and faster. And it becomes more and more difficult for you to walk because it becomes steeper. Right? So today in an organization, for you to be just standing in the same place requires so much of endeavor. Forget about going ahead. Right? There is so much of backbiting. There is so much of envy. Crab mentality, Srila Prabhupada would call. Srila Prabhupada would give this example of a person who is carrying crabs in his basket. And somebody came and asked him, "Sir, why is it that you're not having a lid on your basket? There are so many crabs inside. Aren't you afraid that these crabs will jump out?" He said, "No. The mentality of crabs is that when one crab tries to climb out of the basket, 10 crabs pull him down." And this is what is happening in an organization. As you try to rise in an organization, there are so many other crabs who are trying to pull you down. So much of anxiety. So exactly for that reason, that for you to stand in the treadmill and walk and remain in that treadmill in one place itself is such a great endeavor. So Srila Prabhupada said that human life is meant for self-realization. It is not meant to be working or being like a dog, hog, camel or an ass. But ultimately, we are not concerned about the quantity of human life. What we are concerned is about the quality of human life. Because the human life doesn't have any quantity. We have this redwood forest in California. Those who have been to the US must have definitely visited this redwood forest. It's a huge forest filled with redwood trees. And these trees are about 5,000 years old on an average. So can you imagine? This is a tree which has practically seen so many things that we are practically every day discussing in our Srimad Bhagavatam class. The birth of Lord Krishna was seen by these trees. Buddha came into this planet, seen by these trees. Jesus Christ preaching in the Middle East was seen by these trees. Right. Shankaracharya came and propounded his theory of monism, was seen by these trees. Our great-grandfather, our grandfather, our father, you know, all this was seen by the trees. And as the generations progress, 5 generations, 6 generations from us, the trees will still be standing. We would be long dead and gone. Right? A tree is known for its quantity, but it's not known for its quality. What is the quality of a tree? What is the quality of the life of a tree? It has got no quality. It just stands over there. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnu nam. Just stands over there, tolerating all sorts of weather conditions. Hundreds of years. Recently we were in Mangalore to get wood for our temple floor. And there are so many things that we came to know about trees. These were special trees that were imported from Burma, Burma teak. And these trees, they would have a girth of 6 to 7 feet. And when you saw this tree, you can make out these lines inside those trees. And each line signifies a year. So you can calculate how old is the tree by the number of years, by the number of lines, the number of circles that are there in the tree. And each of these trees are more than 100, 200 lines, signifying that they were standing over there for so many years. So Prahlad Maharaj says in the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's telling his friends, that my dear friends, all of them 5 years of age, this is not the time for you to be playing. The human form of life is meant for self-realization. Wake up. And Prahlad Maharaj, as a small boy, was explaining to his friends that the first 10 years of our life in any case are wasted because we are completely bewildered in any case. We are there with our parents, playing, no concept about what is going to happen to us. What is the future? Nobody bothers in the first 10 years. And the next 10 years, we are busy preparing for our studies, preparing to get a degree, preparing to get some educational qualifications, some practical experience, and so on. And the last 20 years of our life, assuming a lifespan of 100 years, which itself is so very difficult in this age of Kali Yuga. And as days pass, our lifespans are going to become shorter and shorter. The 12th canto very clearly tells us that towards the end of Kali Yuga, a person who is going to be around 25 years of age would be considered as old. That's alarming. Most of the people over here would be dead and gone. By the definition of what Srimad Bhagavatam tells us. So 100 years is the maximum that a person could hope to live. But the last 20 or 30 years of his life, in any case, is completely invalid. He's not able to do anything. He's like a tree. Periodically, his relatives come and put water, pour something down the throat. Maybe, most probably, you're on some tubes. You have to be fed intravenously or through the mouth. And you're just surviving. You're just keeping your body and soul together. And people are, and in fact your relatives are just waiting. When is it that this person will go? Why is he still prolonging his life? Doesn't he realize that he is such a burden to all of us? He's a burden to himself, he's a burden to us. Why can't he just be leaving his body? They may not be expressing it to you openly, but this is what they are thinking. And of course, for a materialistic person, sleep is the most important thing. I remember once when we were looking around for a flat for us in Dadar, we had gone to somebody's home because we were told that in his house is for sale. We rang the bell. This was around 12:30 in the afternoon. So we rang the bell. We had to wait for about 5-10 minutes. No response. And then we kept on ringing the bell repeatedly, and then the door opened. And there was one youngish boy, maybe around 22, 23 years of age. We could make out that he had just got up from his sleep. His eyes were completely bloodshot. Clothes were in disarray. And 12:30 in the afternoon. So for a materialistic person, sleep is the most important thing. And then he will sleep as long as he is allowed to sleep. Right? 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. So Prahlad Maharaj was explaining that 50% of a person's, in the case of a materialistic person of course, is spent in sleep. So half the life is gone. And then out of the 40 years, the 20 years of childhood and 20 years of old age, again, which is gone. So what is remaining? Hardly a few years, and during that time he gets married, he has children. My worshipable God brother, His Grace Mahaprabhu Prabhu, would often tell this story about Kailash. Very famous. He likes to tell this story very regularly. And it's so effective. How this person had built a big business. And then he was completely entangled in that business, maintaining his family. And out of great compassion, Narad Muni happened to come outside his house, knocked on his door. And he opened the door, go to see Narad Muni. So he welcomed Narad Muni in. And Narad Muni is not a person to waste his time speaking mundane things like, how is the weather? How are you doing? What is the political news today? Who is arrested? How many people are killed? This is not something that concerns Narad Muni. So he came point blank to the point that he was trying to raise. So Kailash, why don't you come with me? You have done everything, whatever is necessary. Now you come along with me. And Kailash said, my dear sir, I still have my children to grow up. No doubt my business is established, but my children, let them grow up a little bit more, then I'll come with you. So Narad Muni was disheartened. Just imagine, you have Narad Muni coming, just what would all of us do if Narad Muni came and told us, come on, let's get out of this material world, right? We would immediately grab hold of his lotus feet and and finish off with our material life. But Kailash was a different person. So again, Narad Muni came back after a few years. And then again Kailash gave him an excuse that my children have now grown up. And like this, it went on for several times. And finally, once when Narad Muni came back, he saw that there was no Kailash. Kailash had gone. But then there was a dog outside. And Narad Muni, by his mystical ability, he could see that this dog is Kailash. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajata antakalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever we think of at the time of death, that will be the body that we will attain in the next life. Bhagavad Gita gives all the answers to all the questions. For a person who reads the Bhagavad Gita, there should not be a single bit of doubt on any aspect about how we have to lead our life. Just through these words, Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna that whatever you think of at the time of death, that will be carried on to your next life. And just the previous words, Lord Krishna says, Antakale cha maam eva smaran muktva kalevaram yatra yati samadbhava yati nati yatra samshaya. If we think about Krishna at the time of death, then we go home back to Krishna. We purchase a one-way ticket. But of course, it's not easy to think about Krishna at the time of death unless we prepare ourselves to be thinking about Krishna the whole life. So Kailash became a dog, but still he was so attached. So Narad Muni told him, okay Kailash, now at least you come. Kailash said, see my children, they are so foolish. I want so much of money for them. They leave their door open. And I am required to be over here. Just to ensure that thieves don't come. Please, let my children become a little bit more mature. Children never become mature in the eyes of the parents. Right? For the parents, the child is always a child. He might be a 45-year-old man, but he's always a child. They think that he is completely immature. So Kailash also thought that my children are so immature. Please, Narad Muni, just a few more years, then I'll come with you. So Narad Muni again. Once more Narad Muniji came. And there was no dog that time. And just as Narad Muni was coming into the compound, he heard a slithering sound. And right at his feet, there was a snake. And the snake was who? Kailash. Kailash had taken the body of a snake. And then Narad Muni was supremely compassionate. He said, okay, now enough is enough. And he called all the family members of Kailash and told them that there's a snake over here. Please kill it. And all the family members came and killed the snake. Their own relative, they didn't recognize that he was a relative. Ancestor. There must have been a photograph of Kailash somewhere in the house. But then that Kailash and this Kailash, there's a lot of difference. So that is the end of Kailash. And Kailash went back with Narad Muni to the spiritual world. So this human form of life has got no quantity. But the only hope that we have is to ensure that this human form of life, we put it to its maximum quality. So Srila Prabhupada was explaining in that class that what is the biggest problem that man faces today? It is not a job. It is not buying a house. It is not about having a big bank balance. It's not having a position in society or a very powerful job. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. This is the biggest problem that is facing mankind today. The 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is explaining that what is true knowledge? True knowledge is the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Perception of the evil. So how can birth be evil? All of us are looking forward to our birthdays, right? In Krishna consciousness, we don't call it birthdays, we call it appearance days. Because you're born only once. We understand that. Okay, we are born only once. Right? But in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that even your birth is evil. Birth is miserable. The Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, Kapila Dev is explaining to his mother Devahuti. Devahuti asks a very, very pertinent question to her son. Kapila Dev was the son of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So Devahuti asks Kapila Dev that, please enlighten me about the process of birth and death. For by hearing about these calamities, we can become detached. So Devahuti is calling this as calamities, birth and death. And then Kapila Dev goes into a very long-winded explanation about how a materialistic person tries to earn so much of money in order to keep his family together, working day and night, sweating, foaming in his mouth, just to get that satisfaction that he's taking care of his family. And then the whole life is spent like this. And towards the end of his life, when he becomes old, he's neglected by his family members. And then he feels so much morose in his heart. His whole life he has spent trying all sorts of ways and means to earn money for his family members. Some of them good, some of them bad. But then ultimately, his family members start neglecting him. And this person, gradually, he slips into a situation which is called active dying. Starts preparing to leave his body. And because his throat is choked up with mucus, he is not able to make any sound. He wants to express something to his family members. He is lying down. All his family members are surrounding him. And he wants to tell something to them. He wants to express to them how much he loves them. But because he is not able to speak, his eyes are bulging out of his sockets. He is in so much of pain. And then in such a condition, he leaves his body. And because of all the sinful activities that he has done, he sees in front of him all the Yamadutas. We are narrating now for the morning Bhagavatam class, the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Ajamil. Where Ajamil sees the Yamadutas coming in front of him and they are so ferocious. So this person, as soon as he sees the Yamadutas, he passes stool and urine out of fear. So we should understand that when you see any person who at the time of leaving his body passes stool and urine, he has actually seen the Yamadutas. A devotee never has to see the Yamaduta. So you'll see, devotees always leave their body very, very peacefully. Yeah. Want to talk about a devotee? Even a person who has come in contact with devotees leaves his body very, very peacefully. I remember my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, he was afflicted with cancer. And he left his body a few years back. And they were staying in Goa. And because the treatment facilities were not so good in Goa, he came to Bombay. And he was here taking treatment in the Tata Memorial Hospital. For 4 months he took treatment, chemotherapy, radiation and whatnot. And during that time, he had an opportunity to come and take the darshan of Radha Gopinath. He had the Mahaprasad of Radha Gopinath and the remnants of the food that we were offering to our deities. For these 4 months, he was eating only prasadam. And he was a person who was completely addicted to all sinful activities. Except maybe illicit sex. But as far as I know, all the other things, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. And he was not very old, he was just about 52 years of age. But because of the lifestyle that he was leading, he was so sinful. But because in that 4 month period, entirely by the mercy of the Lord actually, he was in the association of devotees, he came into contact with devotees. We happened to be there when he was leaving his body. We were there in Goa. And we were chanting the holy names. And he left his body so peacefully. One moment he was breathing, the next moment he stopped breathing. Just that. It was not as if he had chanted the holy names for 20 years or 30 years. Right? So if that is the condition of a person who has come into contact with devotees for just 4 months, how fortunate we should be. How fortunate we should consider ourselves to be. Right? We are always in the association of devotees. We are always taking darshan of their lordships. We are always serving Vaishnavas. We are always honoring Krishna Prasad. Right? So, Kapil Dev is explaining to Devahuti about the sinful man. He sees the Yamadutas pass his stool and urine. And then after that, he is dragged to the hellish planets. And in these hellish planets, he is eaten alive by vultures, herons, and meat-eating animals. He is boiled alive in a pot of boiling oil. And all this he is experiencing. He is seeing his body being cut into pieces. When our body gets cut into pieces, fortunately, our physical condition is such that we immediately would become unconscious. Right? So that is a saving grace that is given to us in this human form of life. If we undergo so much of pain, then our body becomes unconscious. Then we become unconscious. Our mind switches itself off. But when you are in the hellish planets, all the same things you are undergoing and you are experiencing it for yourself. You have birds that come down and pluck your eyes out. And then you have another set of eyes coming to see your eyes getting plucked out. You have your body being cut into pieces. You have your body which is being crushed. Like a person crushes sugarcane between two wheels. And you are experiencing for yourself how your body is oozing blood out. And all this, you are alive. The subtle body is experiencing all these transformations. And particularly a person who has been indulging in illicit sex, he moves into a particular hellish planet called as Tamisra or Andhatamisra, where he is made to embrace the body of a woman which is made of iron and which is red hot. He's forced. And a brahmana who drinks alcohol, liquor, is forced to drink red, hot, molten iron. All this is being related by Kapila Dev to Devahuti. And finally, after he finishes off all his sinful actions, then he begins the process of evolution, transmigration through the 8 million species. And finally, he comes to the human form of life. And out of this human form of life, this 4 lakh species of human form of life, majority are uncivilized. They don't have any concept of who God is. Complete atheistic. Want to talk about worshipping? They don't even know who Krishna is. And still the person is given an opportunity to further progress in his spiritual life. And then, if by his very, very good fortune, he comes into the contact of a bona fide spiritual master or a Vaishnav, then he is connected to the Sampradaya. So that is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschid Yatati Siddhaye. It's so rare. How grateful we have to be. Just because we are given this opportunity to be connected to this glorious movement of Srila Prabhupada. And then begins the process of giving birth to a child. So this soul, which has gone from this materialistic person into the hellish planet, comes through the semen into the womb of a woman. And then the process of birth takes place. Where the soul gets covered with physical elements, earth, air, water, fire, ether, and then the baby slowly starts developing, and the womb. One would think this is how a materialistic person sees the womb. When he's so much in anxiety, he would like to go back into the womb of his mother. Right? Everybody thinks, oh, the womb is such a comfortable place. I wish I was back in the womb of my mother. Right? Sukadeva Goswami spent 16 years in the womb of his mother, but that was for a different reason. Not because he wanted to stay in, but because he didn't want to be exposed to the horrible influences of Kali Yuga. And once he became completely developed, then he came out of the womb and then just left the family. just walked out. But that was Sukadeva Goswami, a Mahabhagavat, Paramhams, devotee of Lord Krishna. But for a normal living entity, in the womb of its mother, it is being bitten by worms. And whatever the mother is imbibing in terms of food, if it is bitter, hot, pungent, sour, all that is suffered by the child. And then, literally Kapil Dev is explaining to his mother that the child in the womb of its mother is, if it is fortunate, it is praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that, my dear Lord, please, when I get out of this womb, I'll become your eternal devotee. I'll surrender myself to you eternally. And then, when the child is forcibly ejected out of the womb, because of the pain, intense pain that the child experiences, the child forgets everything. His complete memory becomes blank. And the moment the child comes out, it becomes the center of attraction. Oh, my dear son. Oh, my dear daughter. You're so beautiful. You're so handsome. You're so nice. You're so soft. All these adjectives are heaped on this child. So lovingly, it's embraced by everybody who comes, kissed by everybody. And this ahankar starts developing in the child, the false ego that I am the controller. I am great. I am the unique person in this world. I am somebody. And unless and until the child comes into the association of devotees, it goes back into the cycle of birth and death. Repeatedly. Again and again and again. And what about disease? We can see how many people are suffering today. Sometimes people are in such terminal conditions that they want to leave their body, but they can't leave their body. The soul is just not yet ready to leave their body. Suffering pathetically. In terminal cases of cancer, particularly if you visit a hospital. I was once in a hospital where there was an AIDS patient dying. Radha Gopinath Prabhu's explanation came to my mind at that time when I could see this person. Maybe he had a few weeks to leave. But he, because he was a living entity and because that soul was residing in his body, he was suffering so intensely. And yet the soul is not yet ready to leave the body. Because till the next body is ready for the soul is not yet ready to leave. And in such conditions, most people try to commit suicide. Because they find death an easy way out. The scriptures tell us that when a person is dying, it's like being bitten by 40,000 scorpions. 40,000 scorpions. Our Sanat Kumar Prabhu would tell us that when we were in Dhound, when we had a farm in Dhound, and there would be scorpions over there, some of the people over there would get bitten by scorpions at night. Just one scorpion. To be bitten by one scorpion meant for 2 days, he is writhing in pain for 48 hours. And nothing that you do can alleviate that pain. It's so unbearable. And when a person dies, it's like being bitten by 40,000 scorpions. So you can imagine that a person who wants to commit suicide, for him, living is more intolerable than being bitten by 40,000 scorpions. Can you imagine? It's so intolerable for him to leave. He prefers to die rather than leave. So that life has become so intolerable for him. So death is so painful. And what to talk about old age? The biggest problem today that is being faced by the Western countries is the increasing number of old people that are being produced in society. Because of new drugs, because of better medical treatment facilities, people are living longer lives.
What is the quality of their life?
We had spent a few years abroad and we were really shocked. Abroad, nobody stays with their parents. In India, we still have that culture, fortunately. Our old parents stay with us more often than not. And the children look after their parents, at least call them up or whatever. But in the West, the moment you are 18, you leave your parents' home. Right? So no child will ever stay with his parents. The moment he's 18. So invariably in the old age, the parents have to move to their old age home. And old age homes are so depressing. Literally there are blocks. When I say blocks, I mean huge buildings. Each building accommodating about 1,000 couples. There will be like that 50 buildings in one locality. And this entire building, externally very wonderful to look at, very beautiful. You'll see lace curtains hanging from the windows, good heating. But these are occupied by very, very lonely people. The people are so lonely that throughout the day, they can't even tolerate staying at home. So in the West, we have the supermarkets, right? Of course, in India also, we are slowly catching up with the West in that respect too. We have the shopping malls coming up. Huh? The supermarkets, and now there are something called as hypermarkets. These hypermarkets, some of the hypermarkets are so big that you could lose yourself in them. You could get in, and then for hours together, you could just be wandering inside, not knowing where the exit is. They're so huge. And they're open 24/7, round the clock. And these supermarkets and these hypermarkets are flooded only by these old people. You will see them everywhere. And these hypermarkets, they have all the facilities. They have toilets inside, they have restaurants inside, they have restrooms, you can have a bath. Everything is available inside. So these old people, just because they are not able to manage their mind with the loneliness, they come to the supermarkets. And right from morning till night, they spend their time over there. Sometimes overnight. Just wandering about. They may not buy anything. But they just want that association. They just want somebody to be there. They just want to feel that they are somewhere where there are people around. And right, it's unbelievable. So physically, everything is there, taken well care of. Their bodies are kept in good condition. Overhauled, they go for a medical checkup. It's all at the state's expense. The government spends billions of dollars trying to take care of the well-being of these old citizens. Not that the younger people are liking it, because they have to pay for it. They are the people who are paying for this. The taxation in the Western countries is so high, sometimes up to 45% of your income is taken away by the government as tax. Because social security systems are so wonderful. Like they said, that from the womb to the tomb, you're taken care of. A child, literally, from the time he's born, he becomes the property of the state. You cannot beat your child over there. If you beat your child, and your neighbor comes to know that the child is being beaten, the neighbor can complain to the police. And the police will come and arrest you and take you away. Right? And nowadays, I'm told in the US, the child is educated in school about the police number, the telephone number that the child is supposed to ring to the police. If the child is beaten by the parents, he just has to dial that number and tell the police that my parents are beating me, please come and help me. And then the police will come and take away the parents. Such a horrible situation. And from the time the child is born, as I said, he becomes a state property. The state is supposed to take care of the welfare of the child. And the parents get a certain amount of money to take care of the child. So if the mother is working, then she can take a break from a job for 2 years. And she will get a substantial amount of money every month to take care of the child and to take care of herself. Right? And then after 2 years, the employer has to provide her the job once again. Whether she is capable of doing the job or not, she has to be provided the job. It's compulsory. And then till the child is 18 years of age, the government gives every month a certain amount of money to the parents to look after the child. Till the child is 18 years. And in spite of that, in spite of all these facilities, the surprising thing is that a country like Germany has a negative birth rate. People don't want to have children because it comes in the way of sense gratification. So old age is a big, big problem. Because his understanding is not there, that material nature is completely controlling us. Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudatma. So this material nature is what is completely overpowering us. And this knowledge is not there. So fortunately, by the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, we have been given this understanding that this human form of life is meant for self-realization. The understanding that birth, old age, disease and death is an essential aspect of our existence in this material world. Make the best out of a bad bargain, Srila Prabhupada would say. This body is nothing but a bag of stool, pus, mucus, urine, blood, bones, marrow. But this body is a vehicle for us to go home back to Godhead. So what is the solution? As Srila Prabhupada would say, that the only solution for our problems is Krishna consciousness. And the only problem that is there is lack of Krishna consciousness. Understanding that this human form of life is a benediction given to us by God for perfecting our life to go home back to Godhead. So the scriptures tell us about great devotees of the Lord so that we can follow in their footsteps. Of course, it's impossible for us to imitate them. What is our qualification? As Srila Prabhupada would say, you don't have any qualification. I made your qualification. Only by our contact with a spiritual master. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevayam. Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. Just because we have come into contact with a bona fide spiritual master, our life has become perfect. Provided, of course, we serve him, submissively inquire from him. The way is given to us. Govind Prabhu today morning was narrating about Bali Maharaj. He epitomizes this particular quality of Atma Nivedan. Complete surrender. The king of this entire planet Earth, who had conquered even Indra. And Indra was dancing to his tunes. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vamandev approaches him, under the directions, under the request of Indra, Bali Maharaj surrenders to him. And Bali Maharaj's own guru, Shukracharya, Govind Prabhu was explaining how Shukracharya was telling him that this is Krishna, it's Vishnu. Take care, he will take away everything from you. Bali Maharaj was grateful in his heart. He was thinking to himself, yes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has come to me. I don't have any qualification, but he has come to me to ask me for something. I should give it to him. And just in two steps, Vamandev took away everything from Bali Maharaj. All that he owned. There was nothing that Bali Maharaj had. And then Vamandev asked him, okay, now tell me, where do I put my third step? And Bali Maharaj pointed to his head and said, my dear Lord, please put your foot on my head so that I can become purified. And Vamandev, with the force of his head, with the force of his foot on the head of Bali Maharaj, pushed him into the lower planetary systems. But gave him incomparable status as a king. And he himself took on the position as a doorman. Dwarpal of Bali Maharaj. So this is the reciprocation that the Lord has for his devotees. To the extent that we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. Ye yatamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. Mama vartamano vartante manushya partha sarvasaha. To the extent that we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates with us. So the only thing that is coming in the way between acquiring Krishna as a very, very important aspect of our life is our own surrender. To what extent are we ready to surrender to Krishna? To what extent are we ready to become like Bali Maharaj? The scriptures also tell us the story of Dhruva Maharaj. As a 5-year-old boy, he goes into the forest looking for Vishnu, practices severe austerities, and finally, when Vishnu manifests himself in front of him, Vishnu asks him, okay, Dhruva, now you tell me, what do you want? Dhruva had actually come asking for something which was not even available to his great-grandfather, Brahma. Dhruva was a son of Uttanapad. He was a grandson of Swayambhuva Manu and great-grandson of Lord Brahma, the creator of this whole planet, this whole universe, material universe. And Dhruva wanted a planet which was far superior to what Brahma had created. And he did intense tapasya. But when he saw Vishnu, all the desires in his heart completely got eradicated. And then when Vishnu asked him, tell me Dhruva, what do you want? Dhruva Maharaj said, that my dear Lord, just give me the association of devotees. Just keep me always in Sadhu Sangha. I don't want anything else. And the Lord reciprocated. Because he knew that Dhruva had already been completely purified, he gave him such a fantastic material opulence. He gave him his own planet, which could never be annihilated. And he gave him a lifespan of 36,000 years. And told him that you rule over this planet for now. And then at the end of your life, you can come home back to me. Srila Prabhupada explains that because Dhruva Maharaj had become completely purified, the Lord knew that whatever opulence was given to him would never be misused. Sometimes the Lord gives devotees material opulence. But for us, conditioned souls, there's always a danger that we might use that material opulence for our sense gratification. As His Holiness Radhanath Swami was explaining, that Krishna consciousness is like a pump. Just like we see this fountain over here. We have a pump, and this pump pushes up this water upwards. And through the process of Krishna consciousness, through the process of bhakti yoga, our consciousness gets pushed upwards. But the natural tendency of our consciousness is to degenerate, to come down. Just like the water in the fountain. It has to be pushed up with force, but then it naturally comes down. Unless and until we have the association of devotees, Srila Prabhupada would say, that any person who thinks that he can make spiritual advancement without the association of devotees, he is insane. He is an illusion. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Kahe, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hai. Just for a moment association, 1/12 of a second, to associate with a pure devotee, we can perfect our life and go home back to Godhead. Lava. So the beauty of Krishna consciousness, what has been given to us by Srila Prabhupada, with so much of endeavor,
at the ripe old age of 70 years, when ordinarily any of us in that age would be wanting to go to Vrindavan, buy our own house over there, very close to Krishna Balaram temple, right? Go every day for Mangal Aarti, chant our rounds, maybe chant 64 rounds, hopefully by that time, right? And prepare to leave our body. At that time, Srila Prabhupada crossed over the oceans to go to America, not by an aeroplane, but by a rickety old ship, the Jaladuta. Suffered two heart attacks on the way. And for 1 year, Srila Prabhupada was so lonely. He had no friends, nobody to take care of him, no money, nothing. And periodically he would come to the Boston Harbor and look at the ship going back to India and thinking, maybe I should sit on the ship. Maybe I should go home back. I don't think I'm capable of doing this. It's too much endeavor. Let me forget this. Let me go home back to Vrindavan and let me prepare to leave my body over there. He would think like that. But then at that time he would think about the instructions of his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He had received this instruction about 45 years back when he was just 26 years old. In 1922, when he met his spiritual master for the first time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at him and told him that you appear to be a very intelligent person. Why don't you preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English language in the Western countries? Abhay Charan was completely bewildered. He had just come on the insistence of his friend. Because Abhay Charan was accustomed to sadhus coming to his house. His father, Gaur Mohan De, used to invite sadhus. Some were good, some were bad. Most of them were bad. And Abhay would see that these people who would come to the house in the guise of sadhu, not really sadhus. They would be indulging in all sorts of activities. So he was not very impressed when his friend Narendra told him that there is a sadhu who has come to this Ulta Danga Junction, number one Ulta Danga Junction, and he is giving darshan over there. Let us go and meet him. And Babai Charan, Srila Prabhupada told him, no, I'm not interested. I've seen so many of these sadhus. And Narendra literally had to catch hold of his hand and take him. And the moment he paid obeisances, because this is the nature of a Vaishnava. Moment you see, and Srila Prabhupada was a Vaishnava from birth. Gaur Mohan De had instilled in him all the qualifications, everything that was required for him to become a Vaishnava. And Gaur Mohan De, when he would meet sadhus, he would just tell them, please pray that my son becomes a devotee of Radharani. Right from the early childhood, Abhay Charan knew what it was. Who was supreme? Lord Krishna was supreme. We never knew. When I was young, I was an atheist. I didn't even know who Krishna was. Krishna was somebody. Because we were born in India, we knew that Krishna was somebody. But certainly not that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. But Abhay Charan knew right from his birth practically that Krishna was the supreme personality of Godhead. And he should be paying respects to sannyasis. So the moment he saw Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he paid prostrated obeisances to him. And when he got up, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is giving him this instruction. Srila Prabhupada remembered his instruction for 45 years. So that is why Satsurup Goswami, when he writes this beautiful book, Prabhupada Lilamrit, the first section is, he calls it a lifetime of preparation. Srila Prabhupada had spent the 70 years of his life preparing to go to the Western countries. And Lord Krishna tested him to such an extent that it would be impossible for us, for any of us, at least for me, to withstand that test. Distributing Back to Godhead magazines in Jhansi, in the hot summer, Srila Prabhupada had a stroke. Sunstroke, fell down on the street. He was gored by a bull. And he was going to tea shops. People were drinking tea and he was telling them, please read this magazine. Please take this magazine. For 1 hour, 2 hours. 1944, Srila Prabhupada started this Back to Godhead magazine. And then when he went to the West, he has to stay with his family, meat-eating family. In the same refrigerator, there was meat and there was prasadam that was cooked by Lord Krishna, by Srila Prabhupada and offered to the deities. Srila Prabhupada managed all that. He was staying in the Bowery, one of the most horrible places, filled with drunks, drug addicts, prostitutes. He had all whatever he possessed taken away from him, stolen. And yet Srila Prabhupada continued. Just for you and for me. Just so that we could, by the causeless mercy of the spiritual master, by the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we could come into the association of devotees. So how important it is for us to be so grateful. So finally, to conclude, I would just say that all those of you who have come for the first time to see Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, please take to this process. It's very practical and it's very simple. Just like how we go to school and we are expected to learn ABCD, in spiritual life also we have ABCD. And if we learn this ABCD, then we can get a PhD. PhD means not a PhD, but we can become Paramhams Das. And this A is for association, associating with devotees. B is for books, reading the scriptures. C is for chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare, Hare. And D is for diet, Krishna Prasadam. Just by following these four simple, basic things of Krishna consciousness, you can perfect your life. And for those of us who have spent some years in Krishna consciousness, let us take this opportunity to introspect internally every day. Because Krishna consciousness is an everyday affair. Krishna consciousness is not something that we do once in a while. It's not like the people who go to the various other temples. On Monday you go to this temple, on Tuesday you go to this temple, on Wednesday you go to this temple. Throughout the week they are going to temples, but they are not making any spiritual progress. But devotees in Krishna consciousness may not come to temples for weeks together, but they are following the process every day. We are chanting the requisite number of rounds every day. We are associating with the holy names. We are associating with Krishna Katha. We are associating with the books. Book Bhagavat. Not necessarily that we may get a chance to associate with the person Bhagavat, but if we can, that will be wonderful. But if we don't, nothing is lost. We can associate with the book Bhagavat. So those of us who are following this process, let us introspect internally every day and meditate on our wonderful, great fortune to be coming into this glorious movement. And give this to others. Tell others about it. Invite others to our temples. Invite others to our satsang programs. And give them what we have. Entirely by the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada and their lordships been given. So I am very grateful to be given this opportunity to speak in front of exalted audience like all of you. Please tolerate. Thank you for your toleration and please forgive me for the inadequacies in my presentation. If there are any questions, maybe you can take one. Going Prabhu. One question or there's no time. Goen Prabhu says we can have one question. Yes. We have a mic.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I want to know that is the name of Govinda equally powerful and as holy as the name of Lord Krishna?
The question is whether Govinda is equally powerful as Lord Krishna. Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sharva Shaktis. The Lord has got unlimited names. Because the Lord is unlimited, the Lord has got unlimited names. And each of these names have been given the same potency by the Lord. So whether we are chanting Govinda, or whether we are chanting Vasudeva, or Janardana, or Hari, of course, it's having the same potency. But in this age of Kali Yuga, we have this Maha Mantra. Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. The name of Hari is the recommended name to be chanted in this age of Kali Yuga. Kaler dosha nide rajan hasti eka mahan guna kirtana evar krishnasya mukta sanga param rajayat. In this age of Kali Yuga, which is full of faults, Sukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj that there's only one benediction, and that is the Sankirtan movement, chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in this age of Kali Yuga, this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has been given, is recommended by Lord Brahma to Narad Muni. So, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna himself, who advented 500 years back, he came to teach us the Sankirtan movement. So by chanting these holy names regularly, we can make unlimited spiritual progress. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells these devotees from Kulinagram that a Vaishnava is a person who chants the holy name of the Lord just once. So that such a person is to be considered. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says such a person is to be considered the topmost Vaishnava. So whether we chant Govinda or whether we chant Krishna, it's really no difference. Because the Lord's potency is there in every name of the Lord. But the Acharyas have told us what we should chant. And we follow the Acharyas. That is parampara. In every aspect of our life, we follow the Acharyas. Right? When we are born, we follow our mother. Later on, when we go to school, we follow our teachers. Later on, when we go to office, we follow our bosses. Correct? So somebody or other is our Acharya. But the Acharyas who have given us the philosophy of Krishna consciousness tell us that this is the recommended mantra to be chanted in the age of Kali Yuga. Of course, there are four sampradayas, and each of these four sampradayas have their own mantras, mahamantras. Not to say that if we chant those mahamantras, we won't go home back to Godhead. We will, definitely. Because so far as we are connected to a bona fide parampara, bona fide sampradaya, whatever mahamantra we chant that is pertaining to that particular sampradaya will go home back to Godhead. Because that sampradaya begins from Lord Krishna. Krishna will take us back. Guru will take us back home back to Godhead. So thank you very much for your patient listening. I encourage all of you to come and participate in the Sunday Feast program. Those of you who come for the first time, we have three temples here in Mumbai. Radha Ras Bihari Temple, which is the first one established by Srila Prabhupada. Then we have the Radha Giridhari Temple in Mira Road. And we have the Radha Gopinath Temple in Girgaon Chowpatty. The Sunday Feast program is held every Sunday. Please come, participate, and make your life a success. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.